We're back at Fitzgerald's in the Bluebird camper van with John D. Graham, singer-songwriter from Austin, Texas. Thanks for joining us.
It's glad to be here.
Was running around looking for Bill a little bit earlier. Heard a little bit of your set. You're a regular at this thing.
Oh, yeah.
I know, I've seen you before.
For 14 years now.
Why do you keep coming back to this?
Because I love it. Because it's the best festival there is.
And why do you say that? What's the ambiance like for you?
Well, I mean, for me, it's a huge assemblage of like-minded people who all want to hear good music, and they don't care what kind of music as long as it's done well. And the audience is so open and willing to listen and willing to experiment. And I did everything from just the ear-splitting volume thing to just, I got everybody in the room to be completely quiet and did a little tiny, you know, jewel of a song. And it's like, they're willing to go anywhere with you, you know? And so that's why I love it.
Does the Roadhouse ambiance here, does that speak to you at all, being from Texas?
Well, I mean, yeah. Here
in Chicago we go, this is like a great, the only Roadhouse around Chicago, maybe the Hideout. But
well, it does. No, absolutely it does. You know, I think there's this sort of vague, mysterious connection between this place and Austin, you know? I mean, with Marsha Ball and with Joe Ely, and this is where a lot of the people that come out of Austin, this is where we come to play.
Yeah.
You know?
We were talking to Curtis McMurtry earlier.
Yeah.
I know you've worked with him.
Oh, yes.
I think it sounds like you've mentored him a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But he talks about your commitment. Tell me where that comes from. And you've been so loyal to Austin. Did you ever go to Nashville? You stuck it out?
No, I lived in Los Angeles for about 7 years.
Uh-huh.
And that was really, it was a great educational experience about where I wanted to be and where I didn't want to. As far as commitment goes, when you do something that is of the spirit and you do something that is of the heart, you have to commit to it, because you can't change your mind halfway through, and if you only give half of what you've got to an audience, they know it, you know? And if you only give half of what you've got to your career, that's all you'll get back, you know? And this is what I do, and I am completely committed to it, you know?
What'd your folks do?
My dad was, he was a driller, he was a deckhand, he was a farmer, cotton farmer. Later in his life, he got a job for the state as a watermaster, riding a boat up and down the Rio Grande in the border between Texas and Mexico, keeping eyes on pumps, taking water out and measuring who was taking what. And my mom was a third grade school teacher with a PhD in education. So we were anomalous farm people.
Yeah.
You know, she was way too smart to be doing what she was doing. I think it frustrated her. My dad was, this tells you who my dad was, is he decided he wanted this state job, and he had a ninth grade education, and this job required trigonometry, because you had to measure moving feet of water. So he taught himself trigonometry by going to the library and checking out books. So his whole thing was, if any man can do it, I can learn to do it. And I think that's where part of my commitment comes from, is him going, all right, do it, you know?
What part of Texas was that at?
That would be a little valley called Quemado Valley, which in Spanish means burnt, the burnt valley. And literally, you could walk out the front door of my house and in 15 minutes be standing on the banks of the Rio Grande. And very porous border, you know. Where I went to high school was Eagle Pass, which is about 20 miles from there. And all of high school was going back and forth across the border, because there's no drinking age. And it was a great place to get into trouble. And it was full of colorful characters. And so I spent a lot of my time in Mexico growing up,
And what music did you hear? What music did you hear in the air? What music did you hear around the house?
Well,
what,
around what the came house. At you? Yeah. Around the house, it was straight old hard country. You know, like Lefty Frizzell, Ernest Tubb. My God, that was like my dad's favorite. Hank Williams, and then going back and forth between the States and Mexico. There was this, because of the pirate radio stations, there was this blend of weird, like, phonetic versions of American pop songs. And so She's About a Mover and stuff like that, you'd hear that alongside cumbias and my bonitas. And so then there's one radio station that you could pick up out of San Antonio because of where we were in the ranch lands that late at night would do a hard rock show. And one night they played the New York Dolls. And so that, in some way that I cannot explain, put it all together, and it somehow, between the hard country, the Mexican music, the weird versions of American pop and hardcore original American punk rock, that's where my heart is, you know?
Tell our listeners about your time in the True Believers, and I want to make my question kind of specific. You're an empathetic performer, an empathetic player. I mean, being in that band,
yeah.
How'd you learn to kind of give of yourself a little bit?
Well, Alejandro was, I learned a lot from him. I never officially joined the band. They asked me to sit in, mm-hmm. and then they asked me to sit in again, and then eventually I was just part of the band. And so I started bringing in songs because of what I'd always done was write songs for whoever it was I was playing with. And he was like, "Oh, this song's great." I'm like, "Okay, well, here." And he's like, no, you have to sing it. And so then that put me on the spot. Again, commit, you know?
Yeah.
And so the Believers were, it was like a three-way boxing match, you know, between Javier and Alejandro and myself. You have three riders, you have three distinct guitar sounds, and we did three tours with Los Lobos. We toured pretty much constantly for about a year and a half. So a lot of what I know about what I do now, I learned then.
Now, the last time, I didn't see much tonight because we were in the van here, but I think the last time I saw, one of the last times I saw you here, was it during a festival? Was it with the Hobart Brothers?
Yeah.
Now, tell the listeners what that was about, and I don't know if you're still doing stuff like
No, we're not.
It was a great set. I think it was Freddie Johnson.
Yeah, Freddie Johnson, Susan Castle, and myself.
Yeah.
And it was a crazy project where Freddie was living in Austin briefly, and I just loved, like, his record, Can You Fly, was amazing. And then he and I became friends there in Austin, and we started writing together, and I had never really written with people that much, you know? And so he sort of opened me up to the idea of writing with other people. And then he had been friends with Susan for a long time, and when she came to town for South By, he was like, "Oh, you really need to meet Sue Castle." Well, I had a huge crush on her from when I was a kid, you know?
The Castles.
The Castles, yeah. I mean, my God. And so I met her, and it was just love at first sight. And so instantly, Freddie and I were like, "Well, we need to do a band. You and me and Sis, we need to do a band." And so we wrote these songs. The three of us together wrote whole album's worth of songs, recorded them, and then went out and toured it. And it was wonderful. It was so much fun. It was a blast, but it's just too hard.
Yeah.
You know, everybody has their own thing that they're trying to keep aloft, you know, and it's hard to commit to something on the side like that. And but it was wonderful.
I knew her from her stuff with the Continental Drifters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Mark Walton, the bass player for that band, and I played together when I lived in L.A.
Yeah.
And yeah. Carlo.
Carlo,
yeah. And Peter, for that matter. I played actually some stuff with Peter. So
Peter Holzapfel.
Yeah.
Well, now, what do you got going on as far as recording? And
well,
give us how people can get in touch with you.
www.johndgraham.com. And then on Facebook, same thing, John D. Graham. And I just finished recording a 5-song EP that will be coming out in October called Knoxville Skyline. I recorded it with some friends in Knoxville.
Oh, that's great.
And I did a few of the songs off of it tonight, and pretty well received. And then I'm going to do another studio album, a full album, in January. And I can't really talk about it, but it's going to be a pretty cool deal.
And did you do a record where listeners could pick the songs and stuff?
Yes, I did.
Is that out there?
That's out there. It's called Do Not Forget.
Tell us about that.
Well, that was basically... a lot of people, you know, frown on taping, and I've always encouraged the tapers and tell them, send it to me. If it's good, send it to me. And so we compiled 17 years worth of audience tapes, and like it goes all the way back to 96, you know, and it's pretty great. I mean, the sound quality varies wildly. There's me being... like I'm fronting the Gourds on one track. There's me and Alejandro on one track, but it's just sort of these live snippets. And then anyway, it's a pretty great record.
I'll have to pick that up now. You know, one of my favorite John D. Graham songs is Something Wonderful.
Ah,
is that on there?
It is.
Tell us about how that song came about.
Well, that song, I was having a hard time. I was depressed. I was on the road, had been on the road forever, and I was over in East Germany, well, former East Germany, and we were in Berlin for a month, and I was walking down the street early in the morning because I couldn't sleep, and I was looking down, and I saw something caught my eye down near my shoes, and on the wall, written down there, where you would only see it if you were looking down, in perfect English, somebody had written, "I promise you a miracle." And I thought, well, of course, no miracle happened, but what it did was it started a dialogue in my head about what a miracle is. And the truth is, that first cup of coffee in the day, that's a miracle. You know, if you have kids, miracles. So from there, it just sort of extrapolated out, and I'm like, you know, every day you can pretty much wake up and count on something wonderful happening. And there it goes. From
love
there.
That song.
Thank you.
I didn't know the backstory.
That's great. There you go.